everybody, and welcome to a Chicago Bears special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. On today's show, we'll be talking about some Chicago Bears headlines, Brian Urlacher and his Hall of Fame induction coming up this weekend, plus later in the show, we'll have an interview with Tom Waddle, host on ESPN 1000 and former Chicago Bears wide receiver. We've got an action-packed show planned for today, and I'm so glad that you're here joining us. Before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Today's show is brought to you by Mucci World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Mucci World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Single game tickets are available now. Call 708-489-BALL. That's 708-489-2255 to purchase tickets to their next home game. We start today with some very pressing news, and that's the fact that Roquan Smith, the Chicago Bears' first-round draft pick, has not shown up to training camp yet due to a contract dispute. And to make matters worse, Smith is the last player from the first round without a deal. Now, you would think that a contract situation like this, where Smith is continuing to hold out, all has to do about money and how Smith is not getting paid enough or maybe wants more guaranteed money involved in the deal. However, that's quite the contrary, at least according to a new report compiled by BearsWire.com. The report now suggests that Smith and his representatives would like additional protections for his money if he were to be suspended for non-football reasons, like off-the-field issues or domestic violence in that case. But here's my question. Why should a clause like that be a deal-breaker for Roquan Smith and his camp? I mean, he got drafted by the Chicago Bears as a top-10 pick in the first round of the draft, and you're telling me that because of some minor clause, Smith is unwilling or unable to sign this contract? That makes no sense to me. Now, something that does make sense, however, is that Smith's agents are the same as Joey Bosa's, and we all remember, in 2016, when Bosa was drafted second overall, it took him until August 29th of that year to sign a four-year rookie deal. Because he missed almost all of training camp, he was unable to participate in the Chargers' first few games of the year. Now, you would have to hope that Roquan Smith and his contract situation wouldn't get that tense, but at the same time, I have two main issues with Smith and his contract holdout. First off, why is this clause such a big deal, and why is it a deal breaker? Are they expecting Smith to engage in off-the-field activities that aren't good? I mean, that's the message you're sending when you're worried about a clause like this. He's sitting here not signing a contract, not showing up to camp, all because he's scared that he'll lose money should he do something bad off the field. Even as a teammate of Roquan Smith, I'd be disappointed hearing that that's why the contract dispute is still ongoing. I mean, he's sitting here not taking reps with his team, all because he and his representatives are worried that if he got suspended, he wouldn't collect money? That whole thought process itself is flawed and makes absolutely zero sense. And secondly, what happened to being excited about being a part of the NFL? Why isn't Smith gracious that he got drafted and that he's a top 10 pick and that he's going to be starting come week one if he can get his act together and get on the field? I can guarantee you that there are thousands of people who would wish to be in Roquan Smith's shoes, being able to play for the Bears, getting a guaranteed starting spot come week one, and getting paid generously for his first couple of seasons in the NFL. Yet we're sitting here debating contract language instead of seeing him on the field. And yet the one thing that really gets me riled up about this situation is the fact that we don't even know if he's good yet. Chicago fans and the Chicago Bears really have no clue as to whether Smith will produce in the NFL or if he'll turn out like Leonard Floyd. Because believe it or not, Smith and Floyd have many parallels between each other. Looking at college, Floyd actually did better in total sacks and total tackles for a loss. Yet looking at Floyd in the NFL right now, it makes you wonder, what happened in between that time? Will that happen to Roquan Smith, a college standout, having a great senior year, yet coming to the NFL and being unable to succeed? So we're sitting here bending over backwards to please Roquan Smith, yet in the end, is it even worth it? And that's the main question that the Bears have to ask themselves before it's too late. And before we get to our special guest, it's time to talk about one of the greatest Chicago Bears players of all time. Brian Urlacher will be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this weekend. And I have to say, his credentials are certainly worthy of enshrinement. I mean, 8 Pro Bowl teams, over 1,000 career tackles, and 41.5 career sacks, all during a career that spanned 13 seasons right here in Chicago. And probably one of my fondest moments of Brian Urlacher as a player came back in 2006 as the Bears faced the Cardinals on Monday Night Football. Some have later dubbed it the Monday Night Meltdown, and we all know what happened. The Bears came back from such a large deficit to win the game 24-23. In that game, though, Urlacher had 19 tackles and a forced fumble, which was returned for a touchdown by Charles Tillman. I mean, if you didn't know it already, especially after he won Defensive Rookie of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year, you knew after that night that Brian Urlacher was not only great, but was destined for the Hall of Fame. And luckily enough, the voters agreed, and they made Urlacher a first ballot Hall of Famer, which there's no honor that comes before that. Urlacher is, without a doubt, one of the greatest linebackers of all time, and he's certainly one of the greatest Bears players of all time. And with that, it's time for our special guest. He began his NFL career with the Chicago Bears in 1989. By 1991, he became a top offensive weapon and led the team in receiving in 1993. After retiring, he hosted Chicago Bears Game Day Live on Fox 32 here in Chicago, as well as served as a Game Day analyst on NFL Network. And since 2007, he's been the host of Waddle and Sylvie, heard weekdays from 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Please welcome Tom Waddle to the show. Tom, how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
To start today, Tom, I wanted to talk about the Bears and their prospects for this upcoming season, because last year capped off the team's fourth straight losing season. What adjustments are you expecting new head coach Matt Nagy to make this year?
Well, I think that, you know, it's going to be an entirely different offense. I think that they did a nice job in the offseason acquiring some skill position players that I think will upgrade their roster. I think the biggest issue this team has had over the last several years is they just didn't stack up with many of the teams in the league, much less in their own division, from a talent perspective. So I think that Ryan Pace did a nice job. Free agency can be fool's gold at times, so the guys have to turn into productive players. But I like what they did in the offseason, acquiring some offensive weapons. I liked what they did in the draft. You're going to have Mitchell Trubisky in his second season in this offense. It's an appealing offense. So I'm excited. I think you'll see dramatic improvement on the offensive side of the ball. And defensively, this has been a pretty solid crew for the last couple of years. I expect them to remain the same, hopefully get a little better on that side as well.
You mentioned free agency, and of course the Bears signed Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, and Trey Burton to help supplement Trubisky on offense. What kind of impact do you see those guys making?
I think they're going to have a huge impact. I was a big fan of Trey Burton. You know, I know his statistics aren't eye-popping. He was playing behind Zach Ertz, a very good tight end in a comparable offense or style of offense in Philadelphia. I think he'll fill the role they need him to play nicely. He's not a traditional tight end. He's basically a wide receiver in a tight end's body. So you'll see him in mismatches in the slot. You can actually split him out wide as well and let him be an athlete. I think Taylor Gabriel gives you, some explosiveness in a number of ways. You can run end arounds with him. He can work the slot. He can be a dynamic player. And Allen Robinson is a guy that was, you know, his arrow was pointed directly up, and he was on his way to becoming a star before he had the ACL injury. So I think there's a lot more in that offensive huddle to work with. Will it be 100% smooth from day one? I'm not so sure. But the most important thing they did this offseason was get Mitchell Trubisky more to work with.
So with all of these improvements and signings, how many games do you see the Bears winning this year, and when could we see them back in the playoffs?
Well, my prediction is they'll be either 7-9 or maybe hopefully 8-8. Could they really surprise you and catch a hot streak and get to 9-7? I think that's possible. I think it's more likely that they're a 7-9 team or an 8-8 team. I'm most interested in watching the young quarterback develop, though. I don't believe this is a team that will get to the postseason this year. I'm certain it's a team that can't win the Super Bowl this year. So I think when we get to the end of the 2018 season, what's more important to me than the actual record would be the assurance that the kid that they drafted second overall two drafts ago actually is the answer at the most important position in all of sports for the next decade. So if we get to the end of this year and they're 7-9 or an 8-8 team, but you know for sure Mitchell Trubisky is your long-term answer at quarterback, I think that to me would be a very satisfying season.
You know, speaking of former Bears, Brian Urlacher was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this past weekend. How deserving is Brian of this honor, and what has he said to you about how much this means to him?
Well, I think he was very deserving of this honor. I've said for years, I think that Brian Urlacher redefined the middle linebacker position. Nobody had seen somebody play the position the way that Brian played it. It's 6'4" and 255 or 60 pounds, running a 4.5 40. He was the perfect fit for that cover two defense, which has a void in the middle of it. Brian had the athletic ability to go sideline to sideline, get the deep drops, and was an athletic enough to make plays both in the passing game and in the running game. So I didn't think there was, in my mind, I wasn't 100% sure he would be voted in first ballot. In my mind, he was a first ballot Hall of Famer, but those things can be tricky. It was very satisfying for him to see him go in on the first ballot. And, you know, Brian's a really humble guy, and Brian's, you know, I think you saw in his Hall of Fame speech, he wants to be remembered as somebody who was the ultimate teammate, and I think that he played the game unselfishly. He played the game at a Hall of Fame level, and he was a really inspiring guy and gave a really moving speech in Canton on Saturday.
We're talking to Tom Waddle here on Sports Talk Chicago, and Tom, I wanted to shift gears to your playing career, starting at Boston College. Now, you're a record holder for most receptions in a season and in an individual game, and you were also a first-team All-East selection. With all of these accomplishments that you've had, what was it like for you to not get drafted in 1989?
Well, it wasn't a surprise because, I did have a nice career at BC, statistically. But I went to the Indianapolis Combine after my senior season, and I ran a 4.79 and a 4.81 40-yard dash at 179 pounds, I think. I was a little sick before I went to the Combine. So I knew that based on my lack of pure athletic ability, that it was a very long shot to be drafted. And back then it was 12 rounds, so it was even easier to be drafted back in the day. But look, I never was hung up on being drafted in any particular spot. I just wanted to find a way into an NFL camp, and like I had at every level before, prove to people that I had the ability, the desire, and what it took to make the team and contribute. So it wasn't a shock on the draft weekend, but it all worked out for the best.
When the Bears ended up signing you, you know, you didn't play that much for your first 2 years. Then came the Monday night game against the Jets. Take me through what happened that night and how much that game meant to your career.
Well, the first couple of years, I actually was on the practice squad more than I was on the active roster. I think I spent 4 weeks on the active roster my rookie year and comparable amount of time, maybe a little bit less my second year. My third year, actually, my career started to turn in the right direction after being cut in training camp again for the third consecutive year. We had some injuries. I actually played the opening game of the season against the Vikings in 91 and had a good game and made an important touchdown catch and early in the game at the end of the first half. And we ended up winning the game 10-6, so it was a really meaningful catch. From that point forward, you know, some opportunities came my way, and I found myself starting pretty soon. And that Monday nighter against the Jets was a very special, you know, night. I was on national stage, Monday Night Football, and, you know, found a way to have a good game thanks to my quarterback and the rest of my teammates. It was a good night, and we ended up winning the game as well. So, really memorable moment in my career in the league.
Later in that 1991 season, you got to play in the NFC wildcard game against the Cowboys, where you totaled 104 yards and a touchdown. How difficult was it for you to overcome that close loss?
It was really tough. I mean, but, you know, look, I had suffered at least one concussion in that game. I don't really remember the fourth quarter. So not only did we lose the game, I also ended up, I believe I spent the night in Lake Forest Hospital being observed for concussion issues. So it was kind of a double whammy, so to speak, both losing and having to deal with an injury. Fortunately, things turned out okay, but yeah, it was a difficult loss. It was a game we lost 17-13. I think that we had our opportunity, but unfortunately, we weren't able to get past the Cowboys, and that was kind of the start of their dynastic run.
You know, you mentioned a mild concussion. I found online, too, that it said you had a bruised sternum as well. How were you able to overcome both of those injuries and still play for most of the game and do well, too?
Yeah, you know, that was back in the, you know, with 91. It was back in the day where, you just ran out there, and we didn't know a ton about, you know, concussions and brain trauma. And I mean, I would never hold the Bears medical staff or any of the coaches, you know, accountable for anything. It was just the way that the game was played back then. The truth was, I actually, it was listed as a bruised sternum, but I actually had something. I popped a blood vessel in my throat. I didn't even know that it was really listed as a bruised sternum. I started spitting up blood about halfway through the second quarter. So they took me inside to make sure that I wasn't experiencing some sort of catastrophic internal bleeding and realized it was just coming from my throat. I think I got hit in my throat or something happened while I was spitting up blood. And they may have listed it as a bruised sternum, but it was really something. It looked worse than it was, I'll put it that way.
My goodness. I mean, just talk about, you know, sheer grit and toughness. And in the game today, you really don't see that willpower or maybe desire as much. Why is that?
Well, I think you do. I mean, I think you do see a lot of guys, you know, fight through injuries and play hard. You know, I don't think that there's been a turn for the worst with regard to the effort that guys show in the league anymore. I don't see that as a big issue. You know, some people just, I was the exception to the rule. I was kind of the every guy who didn't have a ton of athletic ability and had to fight through some things and found myself in precarious situations because I wasn't athletic enough to create space. So, you know, I was just a product of some of my limitations, but I don't think the game is void of tough people. You have to be at your core. You have to be a hard worker, a dedicated human, and very, very tough to play that game every Sunday.
Going to 1994, after you led the Bears in receiving yards and receptions the year before, you ended up getting demoted for quote-unquote faster and younger receivers. How did that sit with you, knowing that you were the team's best receiver just 1 year beforehand?
Well, I knew I was going to have a bit of an uphill battle when Coach Wanstead came in from Dallas. Look, he was used to a more of a vertical offense, and they had Alvin Harper. They had you know, Michael Irvin, they had Kelvin Martin. They had guys that could flat out run. And I was more of a, you know, work the middle of the field, beat you with my intellect and my cleverness versus my athletic ability. So, you know, I knew they were going to try to get more athletic at the position. I didn't begrudge them that. It would have been nice if I could have continued to find a role, but, you know, sometimes you find a situation where change occurs, and you just don't fit the scheme, or you're not what they're looking for. And, you know, I have no, at the time I was probably bitter about the situation, but over the course of many, many years, you kind of, you let it go. And, you know, it's just, it was what it was.
And after that season, you had decided to retire. Why did you decide to do it, and how hard was it for you to walk away from the game?
It was very difficult, but I went to Cincinnati as a free agent in 1995, and I got through probably a week and a half of camp and mini camp. I didn't even get to training camp, and my knee kept swelling. My hip was bothering me badly. Both of my shoulders were still were starting to show signs of arthritis, and I just, you know, it was a change. I was back in my hometown of Cincinnati, but physically I was not where I needed to be, and mentally, emotionally, the move from Chicago, a team that I had, you know, been so, just so connected to, was no longer a part of it. It was a really difficult change, and physically, I just couldn't really go anymore, and mentally, emotionally, I was kind of spent as well. At that point, I was 28, 29 years of age, and I'd gotten every last ounce out of what I had physically to give, and it just, with the issue I was dealing with my knee and my hip, it was just time to call it quits. But it was tough. I mean, it was something that I was, you know, was an enormous part of my life since the time I was 10 years old. So you never, ever, ever find a way to replace the adrenaline rush that comes along with participating in that sport. So, you know, I've tried to find it in the world of radio and television, and for the most part, it's been the closest thing I can think of to the, you know, the excitement of playing. But there's nothing like being out there and having 65,000 people either yelling for you or against you.
You know, speaking of your career in sports talk and radio and TV, you know, how'd you get so good at your job, and how did this opportunity come about for you in the first place?
Well, thank you for the kind words. I was actually doing a radio show and a Sunday night TV show while I was still playing. So I was on a Sunday night recap show at Channel 2 for my last year or two, and I did a Monday night radio show with Dave Ennett, who's now, who's been at WGN for years now. So it was something that I was doing while I was playing, and I have a finance degree from Boston College. My plan all along was I was going to segue from playing whenever that career ended and go to Wall Street and work in the financial world. And there were just some opportunities in media, both on the radio and television side, that were appealing to me. And it was, I didn't want to start over at the age of 29 as an intern on Wall Street. So I decided the path of least resistance was to get involved in radio and television here in Chicago. And it turned into a very nice career, one that has not been just local, but I've had great opportunities to have a national stage to participate in as well.
And on a final note, I wanted to ask you about your conversation with Stephen A. Smith on First Take back in 2017. I mean, I have to say, you really told him off. Describe the incident, and how did you feel after owning that conversation?
Well, you know, I mean, it's funny. A lot of people, first of all, Stephen is one of my favorite people in the business. You know, you describe Stephen, some do, as you love him or you hate him. I love him. He works his ass off. He's very talented, a hard worker, and off the air, he's one of the nicest guys I've come in contact with in this industry. So just to kind of let everybody know, there was no lingering hard feelings. And, you know, my goal wasn't to try to create any type of controversy. He was just asking me a question about a much-debated situation here in Chicago with Jay Cutler and not being able to play in the NFC title game and the injury that he suffered. And, you know, the conversation went down that road, and I've always felt it's very difficult to point fingers at someone and try to know and understand how that person physically, how capable they are. I think it's a dangerous conversation. It's a slippery slope. And I kind of just made the point that, you know, people in Chicago trust me when I supported Jay Cutler on that front because I'd actually played the game, and they realized that. It wasn't a situation where I was trying to say, hey, Stephen, I've played and you haven't, so I'm right and you're wrong. It was me just basically saying he asked me how my listeners in Chicago feel about me when I support Jay Cutler, and I just told him I think they trust me because I played the game. So I think it was there was more made of it than actually there was no raw intentions to it.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was such a pleasure to have you on today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What an honor it was to have Tom Waddle on today's show. We talked about some important Chicago Bears news, as well as his great playing career, and how he told off Stephen A. Smith. Some very interesting topics of discussion. I hope you enjoyed our interview today. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Chi-Talk Sports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find our subscription box on the homepage. Simply type in your email, click yes on your confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive all of our new articles and podcasts directly to your email. And finally, make sure to find us on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago and you'll find every podcast from the 2018 calendar year. Make sure to give us a review or a 5-star rating. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you again for listening to today's show and have a great day.